When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club, the show where we get people from different parts of the world to come together with a brotherly and sisterly love. Well, in the case of today's episode, brotherly love, and discuss what's been happening in our countries with our cultures. And we talk about those things, hopefully, with different opinions, or at least, you know, our local culture and history's opinion. And today we are going to be entirely in the Judeo-Christian culture of the West, although we will have a little message from our friend Turkey, who I guess is also from the Judeo-Christian tradition to an extent, since he's a Muslim. He sent in a message about what happened in to Notre Dame, which we will be talking about. My name is Patrick Beja. Was it a snicker or a nod that you heard on my west? I won't say left or right. Is Randy Jordan joining us at an ungodly hour, which we decided was quite godly because the sun is shining and everything is beautiful, from California. Welcome, Randy. It's been a while.
It has. Good morning or good day or good evening. It's you know what we're going to have to do this episode of this show is we're going to have to eliminate time zones. We're going to have to shift the entire world to a single time.
I think that would be excellent.
Yes, I do too. We just have to convince many billions of people who aren't going to like it when they first hear about it.
No, I think, you know, the interesting thing is that whoever time zones we switch to won't be too much impacted. So I suggest we switch to mine. Is everyone in agreement? Matthias from Germany, would you agree? It's not too far from you, so I'm sure you
would
be okay with it.
Doesn't change much for me, so.
All right.
Brotherly greetings from Germany, I guess. No, but wasn't there an initiative by Swatch, the Swiss watchmaker, who wanted to introduce the Swatch time a few years back, and that didn't work out anyway?
It was the internet time from the early, sometimes in the 90s, I think. It didn't work out, but I think it would be, it's like Esperanto. It sounds like a good idea at the time, but then you realize everyone would have to switch to something instead of using something that some people already use, which is why I really like Randy's idea of switching to my time for everyone.
I was going to suggest just accessing my, like, programmer brain, that we all switch to one of the time zones that borders the international dateline, which would actually service no one. Like there's practically no one living out in the Pacific Ocean, you know, so I'm definitely far, far away from your idea right now, but we can compromise, I'm sure.
Sure. Let's send a proposal to the UN. It will be discussed endlessly for years and will amount to nothing in the end. I think that is the way it works.
How would the United States send a proposal to the UN? I wonder.
Also, we then have to, even if we have a proposal, then France would just ignore it and say, well, we don't like foreign things, so just ignore it.
France? Why? What do you mean, France? France doesn't do that. We're very pro-European and NATO and all of that.
And you always like English language or the German language or every other foreign language. And
you're a bit loud on the mic. You're clipping out a bit. If you can lower it a tiny bit. And also, in the case of languages, I think it's just that French is an established basic language for the world to communicate. You know, the lingua franca is something that you can't just sweep away. And also, dear Matthias, would you want everything to be dominated by the United States and their language? Would you? Would you?
No, not.
Oh, now we can't hear you anymore. I tricked you into silence. Yeah,
I've been listening to some K-pop lately, and I really, really love how so many music artists work English into their native language. You know, like these Korean musicians have all kinds of English words and phrases that they drop into, through their songs. And I really like that because it feels like pandering, and they're pandering to me.
Well, I know that habit from Japanese songs, which is really funny because I think most of them don't really have any idea what they're saying when they're speaking English.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the case in Korea, but as much as both Japanese and Koreans hate it, I've really found that Korean and Japanese were very close in culture. And that extends to songs as well. But Matthias, are you back with acceptable volume?
I have no idea if
yes,
my volume
it works.
Is acceptable, but
it works. It's perfect.
I'm on the fly.
All right. So before we move on to our discussions, and I think we're going to be talking about, should we start with Notre Dame? Notre Dame. I think we could.
And we're all going to say Notre Dame.
Thank you. I love it. I'm also going to be talking about the elections in Finland. So we're not going to spend a huge amount of time on Notre Dame. But I did want to mention that this show is supported by Patreon. And if you enjoy what we do, if it brings you either amusement or some kind of information, please consider going to patreon.com/thephileasclub. The link is in the show notes, and that is the way the show is made possible, because it gives money to produce it. So thank you to all of the amazing patrons that do send money my way for the show. And if you enjoy it, please, please do consider going there as well. All right. I'm preempting everyone else, I'm going to talk about Notre Dame. It's so hard. Notre Dame. When I speak English, my mind, my brain goes into American mode.
And it's super easy to distinguish in American mode because we have a university over here called Notre Dame. And it's just a university, and it's in Indiana. That's the strangest part of it. But it's just like you say Notre Dame, you're talking about. And by the way, they're called the Fighting Irish. That's the really, truly strange part of the Notre Dame University phenomenon. But anyway, you say Notre Dame, to me, you're talking about a university. You're probably talking about a football team. You say Notre Dame, and I hear the church in France.
All right, so I'll stick to Notre Dame then. How do you say it, Matthias?
I say Notre Dame, but I have the same problem with like you in German, because if I talk in English, I don't say München, I automatically say Munich and stuff like that. So I also have the same problem, but I try to pronounce it the way it is supposed to be pronounced. Same with, for example, Italian city names or Italian language.
Yeah. So, It's always a challenge, because I think it's fair to pronounce it the way you pronounce it in your language, but also I try to do it with names and stuff like that. Turn up the volume just a little bit more, Matthias, if you can.
Okay.
obviously, I think everyone listening will know what happened to Notre Dame, the emblematic cathedral, iconic cathedral in Paris. And it's weird, because I was expecting, when we planned the show, I was expecting to show up and talk about how our President Macron would have made announcements for miraculous cures of all the ailments of the French society, and addressing all of the problems of both the Gilets Jaunes and everyone else, and fixing everything, because it was supposed to happen on Monday evening in France. And obviously, about half an hour before he was supposed to go on the air, we started seeing, unsurprisingly, on Twitter, the first reports came we started seeing the first reports of Notre Dame burning, being engulfed in flames. It was not minor, but it was less impressive at first. And obviously, through the following hours, we saw that most of the burnable parts ended up burning. So that's the roof, parts of the architecture on the roof, and some of the inside, of course. It was really a strange feeling, because I think it started addressing parts of my brain, and I'm guessing many other people's brains in France, that we didn't really know were there. There was a kind of despair that got hold of us in a way that is, if I say it was unexpected, I think people will say, well, of course you care about Notre Dame and it's part of your history. It's not like we go around. I mean, obviously, when we walk around in Paris, it's always there in the background and you know it's there and you look at it and you admire it and you value it. But it's the kind of thing that you never think could be not there. It's like you never value the things until you lose them, right? Kind of. And it applies to everything. And we kind you don't realize the value you assign to something like the incredible heritage that Notre Dame represents until it's threatened. And as we were seeing it, it's kind of like, I guess, you know, the only thing close-ish to feeling that way that we've experienced in the past couple of decades have been terrorist attacks. Like when you first hear about the terrorist attack, and that there's that feeling of dread and uncertainty and inability, like your inability to do anything about it, that takes hold of you. And on one hand, it's not, you know, it's not as bad as a terrorist attack because no one dies. There was one fireman that was injured, apparently severely, but I haven't heard that his life would be in danger. So hopefully he's okay. But so no one dies, so that's obviously not as bad. But at the same time, it's an attack on your, not an attack, but an endangerment of your history, of your identity. And my first reaction was to explain to people on Twitter and to the world what Notre Dame represents. Because anytime someone talks about Paris, I usually hear, you know, the Eiffel Tower, the Arc de Triomphe, the Champs-Élysées, these places, but people speak about Notre Dame less, I think. And so I assume that people didn't realize how important Notre Dame is. And very quickly, I realized from people replying to me, and it was really heartwarming, I realized that people not only know Notre Dame, which I guess it was naive of me to think that maybe they wouldn't realize how important it was, but not only know, but care about Notre Dame almost as much as I do, as we do. People were heartbroken. People were telling me about, you know, themselves or their loved ones actually breaking down and crying because they were hoping to take their children to Notre Dame one day and things like that. It was both heartbreaking and heartwarming. So that was the initial reaction. I'm guessing you also had, you lived through it in, you know, live.
I think there's a thing that happens now whenever you're watching a tragedy in real time where it accesses all of your memories of all of the other tragedies that you watched, and you can't help but have questions. You know, like I had a coworker say, you know, just like say out loud as soon as we found out about it, oh, I hope it, you know, I hope it was an accident. Like, you know, like, because other things you've seen that have been horrible tragedies weren't accidental. And those, you know, I'm so glad right now we're not talking about a crime. We're not talking about a, you know, criminal. You know what I'm saying? Like, because that just stinks. It leaves everyone feelings that can, you know, that you can really have a hard time dealing with. Like, it's easier for everybody, quite frankly.
Yeah, but that's why I think the comparison to terrorism or the feeling of the same feeling is questionable, I guess. I know that because, of course, there was this YouTube incident where YouTube's algorithm compared this thing to 9/11 automatically. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, it's not really the same as a terrorist attack because, well, it was an apparently it was an accident and accidents happen and it's still not the same as a deliberate attack on your culture. Obviously, or yeah. Your so the comparison is a bit problematic, I think.
I think the effect is similar, but to be honest, or maybe not similar but comparable, but to be honest, I don't think anyone from what I've seen was really thinking about that. It's just that when you see it happening on Twitter, it conjures the same kind of emotions as Randy was saying, but no one really thought, you know, there wasn't some kind of catastrophe. I mean, obviously you're going to see fake news and conspiracy theories flare up, and I'm sure there will be for years and decades, but that's very fringe. As it was happening, everyone was focused on the tragedy and the sadness, and there wasn't like people saying, oh, it's, you know, Muslim fundamentalists or it's a terrorist attack. People didn't think about that, or I guess didn't think it would be that. It's just that the feelings were comparable.
But I saw a lot of that on, especially on Twitter.
Oh, and I didn't. Was it in German or?
No, it wasn't. I looked at the German because I automatically look at like the usual suspects, I guess, whenever something like this happens, what they're saying, just to see the mindset they're in, I guess. And immediately they started popping up. When the pictures popped on social media, they started spewing their hate and say, the extreme one was, well, there was a Muslim attack, they are burning down churches so they can build up mosques, those were the nut jobs. And then there were the I guess even politicians, by the way, who said this is a symbol for the state of Europe, it's burning, our culture is collapsing, the Occidental culture is dying because of Islam. And that's the comparison they immediately started to propagate after they saw this.
I'll say two things. First, in France, it wasn't the case. I haven't heard anything from, I mean, yes, again, fringes here and there. And there was this incident of this elected official who went on Fox News. And we didn't even hear about those really in France. It was completely focused on the tragedy itself. And so that was clearly maybe some rational behavior by the French subconscious, I guess. But also, you know, Matthias, I think if you go looking for them, I think you're going to find them. And obviously those people that I'm guessing you're referring to and that you go seek out, they're obviously going to be saying that, you know? So if you go look for something on the internet, you will find it. I don't think it means it's prevalent, or, you know, maybe it is prevalent in Germany. I'm not saying it isn't.
That's not what I wanted to say with this. I would just want, of course, if you look for them, you'll find them. It's just and just to be clear, that wasn't the whole sentiment. That was just a small circle of the usual right-wing nut jobs and stuff like that. If you look on the, I guess, normal media and everyone else, everyone was devastated and had the same reaction as the people in France, I guess. It's just, I wanted to point out that there are immediately those groups of people who start to spew their hate. And that's why I think it's problematic if you compare this to terrorism or the same sentiment as terrorism right from the start.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. How did it play out in the U.S., Randy?
My view, looking at the news, the first thing we did was try to find live news on television, and I'm sure it was pretty similar to your experience. It was the only thing anyone was posting about online and social media, and on at least television news, there was just constant coverage because, unlike every generation before ours. Now, when something like this happens in a populated place, you have 100 different angles live that people are streaming to the internet. And it's pretty good footage too. Like it's clear and obvious what's going on. And, you know, what was going on was an inferno, which is also really hard to not care about and look at, you know. I think the real amazing thing, the reason it's such a big story, is not necessarily because of the place per se, but because of the fact that it looked in the moment like utter devastation. And immediately we started seeing pictures. Once the fire was out, we started seeing pictures and reports that the main structure was intact. And here's all the windows that were not destroyed, and so on and so on. And those sort of like good news, it's really remarkable how much we need good news right now, you know, that is a factor in everything I've noticed lately. Like whenever there's some good news, we all go to it. We all share it.
Yeah.
Also something I saw all over the world, everyone is a firefighting expert at this moment. So, mm-hmm. even the U.S. president, of course, but.
Yeah, there were reasons why they didn't use the helicopters and such, obviously, but it was honestly hard to watch for me after a while. And I just stopped, and I woke up in the next day and saw that the structure was intact and that it could be it will be restored. And obviously, you know, cathedrals have been burning for centuries, but they have been rebuilt. And that's a sentiment that is hard to acknowledge when you're in the middle of it. But now, especially with the structure, the walls being there, it's going to be fine. I do want to play this little recording that Turkey sent us from Saudi Arabia. I was curious how he viewed that piece of news from there, and he was kind enough to send us a recording. So let me play it now right here.
Hi. Hello, everyone. How are you? It's been a while. Sorry I couldn't be on the Phillies Club for a while. And sorry, Patrick, I can't join you in this episode. So everybody, Patrick asked me to give you a quick update about the reaction for Notre Dame fire here in the Middle East, and I figured I'll give it out quickly. Patrick, I'm really, really sorry to tell you that no one really cared.
No!
In the Middle East. I have a policy of not really watching much Arabic news, so I just went ahead, I checked all the newspapers, I checked some news channels, and apparently, mostly, they either did not mention it, period, or the reaction was, oh, by the way, there was a fire in Notre Dame. However, that's, of course, not everybody. That's the public media. On personal level, on social media and so on, the reaction was different, but most of the people who actually did react felt horrible about it.
Oh, I pressed pause.
Sorry, and looked at it from a historical point of view. They are either people who were hoping to see it, who care about history, or those who've been there and have experienced it. So it's kind of a divided view here. It depends on who you talk to, how you talk to, too. Media-wise, nothing special. They're not mentioned, or just a secondary something to mention. On social media, publicly, people had different reactions. As there were those who felt sorry about it, who were horrified about it. There are those who didn't really care, didn't mention it at all. Negative feedback, I haven't seen any. I wouldn't be surprised if there was, but most likely it's very small minority because I haven't seen any of it. So that's my update about the reaction in the Middle East for the fire in Notre Dame. And sorry about something like that happening in Paris, Patrick. Hopefully things will be back to normal very soon and they can fix it up. Best of luck, and hopefully I'll be back on an episode in the near future. Bye.
Anytime, Turkey. Thank you very much for that report. I have to say I was surprised. Maybe I shouldn't be, but I was a little bit surprised. I thought maybe the religious aspect would be enough impetus to report on it. I guess they don't really care about that part of the world, which is fair. Maybe we wouldn't care about theirs, but
I do feel like, and I just happened to be listening to some very old episodes of the Phileas Club recently. I feel like the history of the Phileas Club, though, is Turkey telling you that something wasn't a story in the Middle East. Like, I'm sorry, but that just feels like something that's happened so many times that I'm surprised you're surprised.
I think it's fair. I keep hoping that something, you know, it's so big here. I have to say, though, it was not, I wonder if it was seen as something very religious in other countries. In France, it goes beyond. Obviously, there's a religious, very important religious aspect to this. That's obvious, but it goes well beyond it. You know, the Notre Dame is like the center of Paris. Like, maps wise, the point that represents the center of Paris, from which all roads go, is in the middle of the terrace before it. But
I haven't studied history in a while, but Baron Haussmann reshaped everything except that neighborhood right around Notre Dame, right? Like, that there's this like tiny little spot that he completely did not touch, and it's got that church in the middle.
Yeah, there are two islands in the middle of the city, very small, and Notre Dame is on the bigger one. And yes, I don't think he touched. Maybe he did one big avenue through it. It's possible, because it's quite large. But I'm guessing he didn't touch a lot of that area. I don't know for sure, though.
Okay, but like, it's basically, it's got streets that are more than 150 years old as well.
Oh yeah, they're tiny, and the two islands are super crammed, and it's the most expensive place to live in Paris.
And it was in the middle of rush hour. Yeah, the timing. I mean, when the cathedral started burning, wasn't it like 6 o'clock or something?
I think it started, but we realized it like 7:30.
Okay.
But there were a lot of tourists, obviously. I mean, Notre Dame is like the most visited monument in Europe. It's like 13 million visitors a year or something ridiculous like that. I guess there isn't a lot more to say. Politics-wise, it's created a kind of a calm zone of a few days, and it's going to start again in a few days. But it's hard to say. I don't think it will serve anyone, or neither the president or his opponents. We're very much going to get back to the Gilets Jaunes crisis in just a few days now. So it was just a moment for the entire French people to come together and pledge a lot of money. The very rich, the 1%, pledged a lot of money to rebuilding. And Macron said that he wanted to be done within 5 years, which is completely unreasonable, but we'll see. Experts are saying 10 to 15, probably. A lot of it was preserved, and some statues were taken away like 3 days before, some statues on the face of the church, so they will be safe. They are safe. Overall, it could have been a lot worse, but it was a weird night for all of us. The other thing go ahead, Randy.
I've got. Please keep going.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was the election in Finland, which happened a couple of days, like 3 or 4 days ago, maybe last weekend. where something unusual happened, meaning none of the parties got more than 20% of it was parliamentary elections, and none of the parties got more than 20% of the votes. I think it was like 18 or 17 for the most votes, and the second largest party is the True Finns, which is a far-right populist party that's kind of hardline far-right populist. It's not absolutely incredible, but it was a little bit surprising. They have been hovering around that number for a while, and their argument is really all about immigration, which is, you know, it's ironic, I think, in any country, but in many countries, there's an argument to be made about immigration being, being weighing on the country's culture, economy, whatever. In Finland, it's like they get maybe 1,000, maybe, you know, like it's in the thousands of immigrants from culturally different countries like the Middle East or countries that where there are humanitarian crises. The bulk of the immigration is Russians and Estonians, which those parties are completely fine with, or that party specifically, they never address, they never talk about, but they use the numbers of global numbers of immigration to say there's a lot of culturally divisive immigration, when really it's a very small number in a country of 5 million people. But so it's kind of the usual story that we're used to hearing now from, I think, every country in the West. But they got, they're now the second largest party in these elections. As I said, it's not completely incredible for those numbers, but the difference is the other parties didn't get significantly larger numbers. That being said, Finland is used to making coalitions to govern, mm-hmm. and it won't be so that much different now. They're not opposed to the idea of working with the True Finns in principle, but what the True Finns are saying, you know, everyone is now saying what they won't budge on, each party. And so it's kind of helping all of them to decide who they could form a coalition with. And what the True Finns are demanding is kind of in subtext, they're not saying it clearly because they can't, but it would be border control with Sweden, essentially, to make sure that the right immigrants come in only, like to lower illegal immigration, which, as I mentioned, is really not a factor in population control here, and is obviously not doable because of EU law. So they're not saying it. So it's looking like it will be difficult to work with the True Finns, and I think, but they're not opposed to it. The parties are not like, there isn't this this kind of dogmatic, I will not work with you because of these and these reasons. It's more of, well, mm-hmm. let's see what you want. Okay, we can't do that, so I guess we won't work with you, kind of mentality here. So it's likely that the coalition will be formed without the True Finns, but not 100% certain.
It's interesting how much electioneering is going on in the world right now. And maybe it's just the way it is forever now.
But we pay attention more.
We pay attention more. And also, I used to hear this complaint from countries outside of the U.S. that the United States spent too much time worrying about the next election. But now everyone does. And, you know, there's an election in India later this year. Can you believe it's been 5 years since they elected Narendra Modi? There's an election in Canada later this year in October. Can you believe it's been 5 years of Justin Trudeau? This sort of thing. And it's those elections are all like maybe Canada didn't used to call elections and put dates on them so far in advance, but now they do. And
I think they've always done that. I think elections have always come back, you know, at this a similar pace.
Sure. And I don't well, think they, we don't, they about certainly them don't in earlier. Great Britain.
Yeah, right. Well,
we just had, you know, a yet another chance to get rid of Theresa May in Great Britain, and they didn't do that. But anyway, it just seems like it's always happening now. Like there's never a break. And by the way, I really appreciate the countries that go 5 years rather than four. I'm not saying that I want the U.S. to have the current president for more than exactly 4 years of days. But it does make more sense to me for some reason that 5 years is the right time frame for someone to actually stop running for president or prime minister and actually lead, you know?
This might be a very European view, but don't seem to me as if there are more elections now. Well, you get a lot more coverage, and they're a lot more afraid of far-right parties getting votes in an election, but the sheer number doesn't seem to have changed, really.
Yeah, I have to say that for me, as a French person, it doesn't really seem that different either. We always care about elections, and we're very engaged. I mean, obviously not everyone, but if you look at the numbers, usually the number of voters in France is very high compared to other countries. So to me, it's always there. Of course, when it happens in France specifically, it makes more noise, but we always hear about, you know, the German elections, the UK elections, the other countries' elections. It's mentioned. So to me, doesn't have that same effect.
Also, there's a lot of reports on a local level. So I know if the Netherlands, for example, are voting on a local level, if France is voting on a local level, that's maybe something you don't hear about in the US or in other countries. But for us, it's just normal that there is basically an election everywhere, every time. I mean,
we
have three state elections this year. So it's just normal, I guess.
It's because you listen to the Phileas Club, Randy. That's why.
Yes, it is. But I just listened to an episode of the Phileas Club from 10 years ago where for an hour and a half, we didn't actually ever really talk about any elections. It was right after after Barack Obama had become president of the United States. And it felt, at listening to it, it felt very much like we were done. You know, like, well, okay, there's no elections.
I guess maybe we care about them more. Maybe you're right, yeah.
And it seems that elections are more impactful now. That may not be entirely a true effect, but it just seems like it. It seems like in so many places the candidates are so different that the results really make a difference. You know, maybe. Like I've always loved.
It's not business as usual as it was for 50 years, maybe.
Right. I always love to ask the question: What does the entire Middle East look like if we have President Al Gore instead of President George W. Bush? And that is like, that's amazing. That's a massive change to the world. You know, and it's just a couple of old dudes that were, you know, that were chosen by a Supreme Court instead of the people who voted. But you know what I'm saying? So like when you look at it that way, when you look at how different the whole world would be right now if we had President Hillary Clinton, it's kind of shocking. And you can see why we care so much and we worry about these things so much, because we get the sense that all of these elections at all of these levels offer that sort of diversity of outcome.
Well, so I would say I agree with you for the American elections. I don't think it matters all that much, not that much in France, to a little bit, maybe probably a little bit in Germany. The election itself in the UK, I don't think would matter all that much. A referendum on being part of the EU does matter a lot. It reshapes the geopolitics of Europe and the world. Finland, I don't think matters at all beyond Finland itself, and maybe the local Nordic slash there could be something that would affect Russia, but it would be the Russian Finnish relationship. And so, you know, obviously India, we might talk about India next month. That is a possibility, actually. But India might do something more likely. China, it would change things if it was one person instead of another in India. Although my understanding is that the system is very strong in China. Mm-hmm. Russia, obviously, we all lament the power of many of us lament the power of Putin. But I think we might be... we might miss him depending on who succeeds to him. So
that's overall, always true.
Overall, I would say the only real gigantic impact that a country can have by electing someone on the whole world is probably the US. I don't think the others, anyone else has as much power.
It is always true that you could replace someone bad for the world with someone somehow worse. But
you're
countries
talking about Putin,
Putin, Trump, like that is definitely a truth, but countries don't tend to. They like when a country sort of has a lapse of leadership, so to speak, you know, like that the world approves of, they don't tend to then go, okay, we've found someone who's even worse than Putin. Like,
yeah, I mean,
admittedly, it does feel like he is not an elected leader, and I don't think he's been, you know, a properly elected leader for a long time.
He gets to
lead that country until he dies, as far as anyone can see, right?
I mean,
and
I think things have changed a lot in the past 5 years. Yes. But a lot of people assume that Putin, you know, was kind of a strong man for a long time, and he was. But I'm almost certain that he was actually elected he would have been fair and squarely elected even without the shenanigans. It's staggering. Seeing from the outside, we think of him as some kind of tending towards dictatorship and that his people are against him. I don't think the case as we in the West fantasize that it is.
I wasn't proposing that last part. I was not suggesting that his people are against him and you know that he's being kept in this place undemocratically. Mm-hmm. Like that you can definitely create a democratic solution that gets you someone like him for 20 years. But it really does feel, it's starting to feel like it's been 20 years, and I would not be surprised if it went on another 20 years.
That I agree. For the future, I agree. I will say, however, the reason I'm saying we might be sorry that he's gone once he's gone is the state of the Russian political landscape is worrisome, not because there isn't one person that wouldn't be good as president, but corruption is still rampant. And the reason why Putin is so popular is that he's keeping a lid on corruption in the sense that he's keeping it contained as much as possible. The effects of the Soviet Union, I'm not an expert, that is the way I understand it, but the effects are still very much present in Russian society and administration today. The country is very difficult to run, and the reason I think why Putin has such a high approval rating in spite of all of the very bad things he's doing, and maybe that has changed in the past few years as he's pushed his undemocratic movements, and he keeps to do that and measures. But the reason he's been so actually approved of by his people, if you go out of, you know, maybe St. Petersburg and possibly Moscow, is that he's seen as not corrupted and as someone who is actually, you know, he doesn't drink. He cultivates that image of health and strength. And the lack of corruption is something that's very important. The fight against corruption. So, anyway, well, I mean, I'm not.
It's only been a year since he was last reelected. So we have 4 more years of Putin to go, regardless of what else happens. It's just going to be really, really interesting to see if areas like Great Britain and the United States can manage to come around to pushing back on Russia the way they used to. or if Russia continues to get to sort of, you know, throw its weight around as it has for the last few years. That's the really, really interesting thing. You know, all of these other Western countries have elections between now and when Putin does the next thing, whatever that is, right? Like last time he ran out of terms, he just kept serving, only he propped up a replacement for a little while, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe he just doesn't allow there to be an election next time. I don't know. Like
it's not outside the realm of possibility. I'll grant you that. Yeah. All right. So what's been happening in the U.S.? I wonder, Randy.
The same thing as has been happening in the entire era of Trump. It's become this baseline of nonsense for so long. Now that we've had Trump for over 2 years and so on, there's this baseline that everyone got used to. It actually has got me looking around for, what instead of asking what's going on, we need to be asking what's important and trying to find out, you know, like trying to put focus on what's important. I honestly think, I'm here to tell you, I think the Phileas Club could talk about climate change every single episode for the rest of our lives. Like that is a massive, important story of global, impact that, ground zero for climate change is the United States because it carries so much weight in on that issue. And the news, is dire. The news is really bad on that subject. Of course, you know, like I say, because of how it works in the Trump era, and Trump doesn't care about this issue and doesn't talk about it, it's, you know, you have to go looking for that news. So that's it's very strange. Overall, though, we just have the constant drumbeat of his cabinet resigns, they leave, and they don't necessarily get replaced. So, you know, not only does he have by far the most turnover that's ever taken place in the history of the United States presidency, but right now, at least as we're talking in April 2019, he's missing a lot of his cabinet because he just can't find anyone who will work for him in a lot of jobs. And, you know, as I said earlier, we don't have a secretary to the UN right now. Like that person just left, and I don't blame her, but we have an acting secretary, if that. In a lot of cases, we have these acting secretaries who aren't actually doing anything. Like, they aren't acting. They're a name that Trump scribbled into a blank. And then in other areas, we just don't have – the White House doesn't have a communications secretary and hasn't for a while. They went through like six or seven people really fast in the first year of the Trump administration where the person who is the director of communications would get into power and then find out you can't do this job because you can't work for someone who only ever lies and do communications. It's not possible. And so they all left it. There just isn't one now, right? So the news continues to be strange in the United States. It continues to be something that a lot of Americans are now just hateful toward. They just hate the news. And, it's kind of an effect that's flowing from the top down. We saw the Notre Dame news a lot the last few days. It's only been 2 days, but the last 2 days, we saw a lot of news following the massacre in New Zealand. That continued to be major news in the United States for a lot longer than you might guess. This sort of thing. Right now, though, there's a really strange story today. As I woke up, the city of Denver had shut down all the schools this morning because there's apparently a woman named Sol Pice who made threats that she was going to go shoot a school. And their city is looking for this suspected wannabe terrorist.
And do we know where she made the threats?
We know that she came to Denver she from Miami. We know her name, her age. We have pictures of this woman. Again, I'm just finding out about this the last few hours, but she traveled to Colorado from Florida. So she's Florida woman, which is not funny in this case. And she bought guns and then told people she was going to go shoot a school. And that's when the authorities got very concerned. And now there's a manhunt for this person. And our friends, the Spagnuolo's oldest son, is not going to school today because of this. And that's, yeah. Again, that's the news in the United States, but it's very common, this kind of news. So we're not, it's not easy to startle this country lately, you know, because news is so, is just like this all the time.
I read about the threat, isn't it? Because, the 20 year anniversary, if you can call it an anniversary, of the Columbine High School shooting.
Yes, that's in 3 days. We're 3 days from that.
Oh, and she that's the reason.
Yeah, there
she
was the assumption that this might be a threat because of the anniversary.
It's you, Randy. A few last time you were on, I seem to remember there was despair in your the way you were talking about things. Now I'm kind of detecting resignation.
I hope not. I hope both of those are just an effect and not the truth. There's a lot to be hopeful for in the whole world. Yes, it is really tragic how badly the whole world, and especially the United States leading on this issue, has put off addressing climate change. Like that's terrifying. But there's just that's happened, right? And we have ways to work it to our benefit in the future. And so it's really, really important that we don't despair, right? Like that would just be resignation would be the way to ensure that climate change.
Well, I'm not just talking about climate change. I'm talking about all of it. You know, the depressing news, your president, which you don't like very much. Not just the climate change.
It's important to remember. Like I find it fascinating that the U.S. reelects all of the people in the House of Representatives every 2 years, because that means nowadays, like I say, those elections never stop. As soon as in my district, as soon as we got a truly wretched representative unelected from the House in November and replaced with someone amazing, as soon as that happened, we immediately had to start thinking about, okay, now how do we get her reelected in 2 years? And that's
Is it every two years? I thought it was.
Yes, that's the House of Representatives is every 2 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the reasons why the U.S. Congress is so dysfunctional in the technological age. You know, maybe 100 years ago, a person could go to the House of Representatives and actually work for a year and a half before they even really thought about, now I'm going to go home and get reelected. And by the way, we reelect people at a lower rate than we used to, which is a good thing. But the overall effect in the modern age, right? Like we're living in the age of Web 2.0, is to give us the sensation that it's all always happening all the time. And like I say, that becomes a baseline, and it's not necessarily something that you get resigned to, but you no longer are amazed by it, right? You're no longer startled when you wake up in the morning and realize, oh, there's an election coming, you know, like this that kind of thing. And so that is a difference. Like this this generation gets to experience running the world differently than every previous generation. I do understand why you hear me differently than you did maybe 10 years ago, right? 10 years ago, there was a lot more just flat hopefulness for everyone, right? Like we elected Barack Obama, and some people in Europe gave him a Nobel Peace Prize. Like there was so much hope, right? That okay, we're gonna put the country in the right direction, which will take the whole world in the right direction. And
would you say that? Sorry, I'm interrupting because I do want to ask this. Do you think that hope was betrayed? Is a strong word, but was it fulfilled to the extent that you thought it would? Because I don't feel that way.
What we didn't think about at the time was that our fight to change the world for the better, with that sort of wave of progress, we didn't realize that fight was not with the facts of the world, right? That it wasn't like we weren't fighting to figure out how to give better health care to 300 million U.S. citizens, right? We were fighting oligarchs, and we didn't know it. And now we kind of do. And there's maybe a little hopefulness there. But 10 years ago, we just didn't know. We didn't know that there were going to be a bunch of far right-wing billionaires who would do anything to stop the progress, right? Like, and by anything, I mean who would lie, who would cheat, who would prevent people from voting in Georgia, et cetera, right? And all of that stuff was in our future, but we didn't know it. We had no idea. Like, seriously, most people thought, okay, now we have the big struggle, right? Which is to figure out the right thing to do and do it. We were struggling against the wrong thing, and we still are. We still are. Like, we're still in a place where probably the most powerful person in the United States is a guy named Mitch McConnell, who is, the embodiment of the problem with oligarchy, and is fighting against everything that might be good for the world and is winning.
I'm not sure who McConnell is. Is he like the whip in one of the houses?
The leader of the Senate, the leader of the United States Senate. And so the person that has overseen all of Trump's worst moves, and made them law. And that, again, there is some hopefulness just in knowing who the real enemy of progress is, And that's good. We're looking back on a very recent election in the United States 6 months ago, where big step forward, a step in the right direction happened for at least a part of the federal government. So it's just, we have a ways to go, but I just, it's nice to find some hopefulness, in my opinion, in realizing that we're just one election, which is 18 months from now. It's going to be the longest 18 months of your life, but we're just one election away from having a sane person in the White House who actually cares and does the right thing.
So you think Trump is not going to be reelected?
I hope not. That would be a truly the reelection of like this person who is leading the destruction of the whole world. Like, that would be a monumental failure. It would be so bad that it's just hard to even, you don't want to plan for it, right? That just like, why do that?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if he was reelected.
It's certainly possible. It's just,
you realize that everything you're saying, there's half of your country that sees it in a very different light. I'm not even trying to go to the extremes that we might encounter if we were, a daytime 24 hours news channel.
Sure.
But there are a lot of people who disagree with the way you're viewing all of these things you're presenting as certainties. To an extent.
Well, sure. So, for example, the subject of the Trump administration is missing a bunch of its cabinet, and there's no filling those spots in sight. No one's doing it. It's unlikely to happen. That is a set of facts that a lot of my countrymen just don't know. They don't have those facts. They're not being told. They're not watching something that you might...
I think they don't care that much because the government seems to be functioning kind of as well as it was in the previous administration. And I'm sure you would tell me that it isn't.
It isn't. It absolutely isn't. In fact, the government literally didn't function for over a month
earlier this year. Yeah, yeah.
But that was a shutdown.
It's a different situation.
It's just the way of it that maybe a quarter to a third of Americans aren't getting facts. They're not getting the news about how the world is operating. And that, you know, that's something we have to work through. Sure. Yes. We have to get them some facts. We have to find a way to work around that. They're turning on what they hear the word news. They're turning on something that's got news in its name and they're getting fan fiction. But
so while I agree that's probably close to the truth, I think there's also a fantasy on the left side of the political spectrum that is, oh, they don't know. If only they knew, then they would realize the errors of their ways. And to some extent, I understand the sentiment, but I also think it's a little bit patronizing and a little bit misguided.
That comes from every angle. I've heard that so much lately from right wingers who are really, really into guns. I find all the time, if I would just learn some facts, I would change my mind about guns, that I just don't know what they know. That is not a left to right thing. That is every faction toward every other faction thing. And it makes sense, right? It makes sense that someone who adheres to Fox News feels that they have facts that everybody else, if everybody else would just find out, they would all vote for Trump. Here's the thing. You can do a really simple experiment, and I've done this, and I've watched other people do this and disprove that. And the experiment is you just get different news. You read some newspapers from different countries, from different points of view. You go look at different news channels on television. If you actually do this, and it's hard to get someone to do this, they fall out of the experiment really fast. But if you actually do this, if you just watch this channel and that channel, if you read this newspaper and that newspaper, and allow yourself to just almost randomly get news, and then you turn on Fox News, you will see what I'm talking about. You will see such a striking, sharp difference between all the world and this one little part that really acts like fan fiction. And that gives me hope. I understand what you're saying, like that there's also this leftist faith, right? In the experiment, because like you just imagine that all the different right wingers are going to accidentally do the experiment, and they're just going to, you're going to find out, oh my gosh, I can't believe there's all these facts. But that never happens, and that's not really what I'm proposing. I'm just saying that the world cannot continue indefinitely working on a set of fiction, you know, instead of facts. It can obviously continue for a long time, right? People can get into office and do the wrong thing for a long time based on lies. That's pretty clear. A market can remain irrational a lot longer than you can remain solvent. But where we are right now feels like we've gotten to a nadir in that effect. And I really believe that the future is looking up.
Well, here's to hoping, because, yeah, I mean, I it does resonate with me, the idea that someone watching news from a variety of sources will probably come to a reasonable conclusion most of the time. And so essentially, if someone is watching everything but Fox News, they will have a reasonable understanding of the world. If someone is watching, you know, everything and Fox News, they will also understand what's happening. I do agree, and I hope some people who are listening now and who are watching primarily or only Fox News will bear my saying this. I do believe that someone watching only Fox News, and that, you know, there might be a couple of websites that are on the same line, I do agree that they don't have an actual understanding of the actual facts of the world. I will also say that someone only watching 24 hours news channels, especially in the US, but probably in general, will have a distorted view of reality. I think that's fair. It's much more distorted if you're only watching for Fox News, but I do think it's distorted in that 24 hours news channels are not healthy. I also might even add the fact that there is a bias to American leftist media, not leftist, liberal. I mean, the large newspapers do have a little bit of a bias, but it's nowhere as large as the right wing thinks it is. But anyway, that's a different conversation. But yeah, I do. I for as much as I'm pushing back on you on the idea, I do agree that Fox News does poison the water a little bit. And the fan fiction characterization makes sense to me to an extent. So anyway. Matthias, anything you want to add to this conversation?
Not in particular.
All right, so
we hear a lot about on the news about the US, but it's most of the time it's whatever Trump has been saying the last few days. So
we're getting a little bit of background noise, Randy, from your end. Can you mute yourself when you're not talking? And yes, I will agree with Matthias. What we hear from the US nowadays, how were you describing it, Randy? The baseline of nonsense?
Sure. And I can't, you can hear me now?
Yeah.
I want to say, like, it's important that you understand that we're sort of using the name Fox News to sum up a massive apparatus of varied media sources in coming out of the United States for the most part, although there are some of them in Great Britain. Like, where I'm talking about everything that and really the main sources are like Facebook groups in the US, where your grandparents are sitting at home being inundated with messages from Ben Shapiro and so on. It's not necessarily just this one channel. I could just hear all sorts of people as you were talking, like saying, but I don't watch Fox News. But you can still be inside this this effect that can be described as the Fox News effect. Because that's how it has all evolved. It has evolved to capture you and capture 100% of your attention. Yeah. And I really, really like your proposal that if you follow everything and Fox News, at least you're getting some reality. I wish that the Fox News effect wasn't so insular. I wish it didn't. Yeah. It didn't constantly tell people, don't listen to anyone else, don't read anything else.
Yeah. And as I said, I do think that the American news apparatus in general is, I mean, especially on TV, it's very difficult to get an actual idea of what's happening if you're only watching American news. We talked about Ben Shapiro actually last time with Tony on the show, and I hope he's listening to this episode, but I would love, you know, I went back and listened to an interview, Ben Shapiro, that actually someone else sent me, and I can't get past how clever he is, how intelligently he gives people listening to him the tools to feel like he's being fair to the other side. You know, it's really it is a magic trick that he's pulling off. But, and I would love to discuss this with Tony at one point and to go through the ways, at least in my view, he does this and see what he thinks of my interpretation. I'd be curious to see what he thinks of it. But yeah, I understand what you mean when you're saying it's not just the channel Fox News.
Okay, good. Sorry, Matthias.
Yes, Matthias. What is happening in... no, I was saying, though, the baseline of nonsense is kind of what we're getting from the U.S. nowadays. And from the U.K., we've kind of... We're making our... Putting our hands up in the air and going like, okay, whatever. And in the U.S. as well. And we're kind of waiting for it to be over. And we're hoping it's going to be over in a couple of years. But honestly... I'm not sure that's... And by the way, that's not a left or right thing, except for Marine Le Pen specifically. It's everyone... I think most people in the world are looking... It's not a left or right thing. Like, the binarity of the political spectrum in the U.S. is immensely damaging to the way I think Americans view the world. And... Anyway, we could talk about this forever.
I do really like that point, though, and it doesn't get made enough, especially it doesn't get through to the people in power in the United States, that on the left and the right in every other country, they look to the U.S. and the U.S. appears to be even farther to the right.
Oh, like, yeah, that's absolutely.
That's something that they don't know. They don't believe, you know. And it's just it's just one of those facts that we have to keep trying to get into that you know that bubble.
I'll again repeat it. Everyone in the Western world looks at the U.S. and thinks you are unreasonably to the right of the political spectrum overall, and that's not just the conservative or specifically. Overall, the U.S. is unreasonably on the right and is not... Anyway, all right. Baseline of nonsense. It would be the title if it wasn't already taken by something, along the lines of Notre Dame is for the whole world.
Okay.
All right. To take us... to finish the episode... Matthias is going to be explaining to us how wonderful Germany is right now, how everything is working perfectly, and it is a beacon of hope for the Western civilization.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh. No. Well, there are so many things going on, but I think I'll just sum it up with protests. Because there have been a lot of those lately on a number of different topics. For example, there was, of course, something you might have heard about, the EU copyright law, the reform of the copyright law in the EU Parliament. There was a huge protest and movement against that in Germany. We have the Fridays for Future. You might have also heard about that.
Ones I didn't, actually. I guess it's about climate change.
It is. And then there is there are protests about the increasing amount of rent you have to pay in large cities. And then there is the usual stuff like new police laws and new security laws people are protesting against. So I don't know, maybe I'll just start with the copyright reform, because that's something a lot of people all over Europe should have probably heard about, but most likely didn't.
At least in France, we heard about it quite a bit.
You heard about it, but you didn't care?
So it's kind of difficult, because I think everyone has heard about what it is. But in France, we have a strong content industry in cinema and many other areas that are strongly lobbying for that law. So the people, I think, are unhappy about it, but the actual economic forces are for it. And myself, having looked at the actual text, I was very worried about the initial versions, and in a move that might surprise and disappoint you, Matthias. I am not as worried about the current versions, where I think a lot of safeguards have been added. So I look at it and think, well, there's a lot of hysteria about it, and I don't think it's as bad as everyone else is saying. It's not great, but it's not as bad.
Well, we don't know how bad it really will get, but it's just the protesters aren't against a copyright reform as a whole, but more about these three articles, which were initially 11, 12, and 13, which have different numbers now after the vote. But it's the upload filters and the, I don't know,
the link tax, word. Essentially.
Yeah, how the link tax, yeah. I was going to say Leistungsschutzrecht, but no one knows what that is, no, apart yeah. from Germans.
Obviously, that's what I'm talking about. The rest yeah. of it is somewhat inconsequential, but yeah, yeah that's what I'm
but
talking about as
there was a really
well.
Fierce fight over mm-hmm. here, and it wasn't, it was for one, of course, the media, because they have a vested interest, as you said, the link tax. They have... they are not unbiased, and that showed up in a lot of the reporting. And then there were the politicians who were for the reform and wanted to lobby on behalf of the content industry. And they that almost got out of hand, to the point where they were actually trying to discredit protesters and were insulting them. And a lot of the, especially younger voters who maybe are now voting for the first time, had a very negative experience, because over 200,000 people went to the streets in Germany and Austria, and they were completely ignored, basically. And that's something that will probably not sit well with them, or hopefully, and it has turned pretty nasty, I guess, and it was a pretty fierce fight. And maybe that's why the politicians in the EU Parliament tried to get this vote over as quickly as possible, so that there will be a little bit of time between the vote and the election in May. So there might be enough time for them to forget what they did, I guess.
That feels like the preferred scenario of someone who doesn't like those laws at all. It sounds like that to me, but what would you have liked the government to do? 200 people in the streets, so we rescind the law we voted? What?
No, but if, for example, the German government, the coalition in the German government had a treaty, and they explicitly wrote in this tweet, we don't want upload filters. So the logical consequence would be, well, if we are negotiating on a European level, we try to negotiate for no upload filters. And now we have them, and they...
But you don't think they tried to negotiate for no upload filter, and they didn't manage to find a compromise?
No, actually they didn't, because there were reports about a deal between Germany and France. And if France was lobbying for the proposal, and Germany was not completely against it, but opposed to it. And they say, well, if you vote for the copyright reform, then you'll get your gas pipeline. And so they changed their vote, and now we voted for the copyright reform.
So I don't want to sound too patronizing, but you realize that's how diplomacy works, right? You give something and you get something in exchange. And if every country... I'm trying to push it artificially, because I think it's important to point it out. If every country in the EU never budged from anything they wanted, nothing would function, right? And it, you give something, you get something in exchange. You specifically are against that upload filter. I happen to be against it as well. But taking a step back, it's... we can't have all our specific demand be implemented 100% of the time, right?
Right, but again, it wasn't the whole treaty as a whole, but this specific part. So the council could have maybe made changes to this specific article, or
you make it sound easy. It was the subject of intense debate and anger.
Yeah. No. I'm not trying to say it was as easy as just vote no and that's it. Mm. But again, what I'm trying to say here is that a lot of people were against it, and they now feel as if the politicians just ignored them outright, and not just ignored them, but also made fun of them, discredited them, and in some cases even insulted them. So that's just something I wanted to convey in the context of all these protests. And the other ones, I'm wanted to get to the other one that was interesting. That's the Friday for Future protest, because those are protests by students, and they are protesting on Fridays. They are skipping school and go out and protest.
Oh, right. I did hear about them, about those. Yeah. You're right.
For the government to do to increase their efforts for to prevent, or not prevent, but to limit the climate change. And this is another point where politicians are doing mental gymnastic, I guess, to just do anything to not actually respond to the issue itself, but try to belittle or discredit the protesters. For example, they're saying, well, you're just skipping school. You don't care about climate. If you would have done this on a Saturday, then we would have listened to you, but now you're just skipping school. Or they are saying, well, you're too young to know anything. Go to school first, study, and maybe in 20 years you can do something about that. Mm-hmm. And along those lines, of course, not all of them, but again, a lot of them are trying something like that to shift the focus away from the real issue. And that's something that a lot of the young people don't really like.
Go on. I will say on that front, I think it is a global movement in Europe, at least. I can feel that the increased potency of the message of the Green parties, or not, it's not even about the parties, it's about the issue of climate change, and it does bear a lot more weight than it did, you know, obviously 20 or 10 years ago, but even 5 years ago. I think the way I feel it right now is that a lot of voters who are disillusioned with many different parties are going to end up voting green in the upcoming elections. I don't know exactly what happened or what changed, why the strongly worded messages that we've been hearing for a long time now are finally impacting us more than they did before. But it feels like maybe it's the, you know, the different protests by the young people across Europe. We of course have heard about the Swedish young lady. I can't remember her name, I apologize, but and many others. There you go. And even, you know, Randy is also bringing this up, which I'm not sure he did in previous episodes, but it feels like kind of now is the time. Obviously, now is too late already, so let's save what we can. But it feels like a lot of people who might not have voted green before will do so. And I'm not saying it will become the majority party in every country at the next in the elections going forward, but I think it will have a significant portion of the votes. And I'm not sure why it's changed, or maybe it hasn't. Maybe it's just my impression, but...
Yeah. But again, it's young people have the feeling that their interests are not being served, and they're actually saying, well, you are killing us.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are a politician in your 50s or 60s, you will be dead by the time climate change goes into full effect, and you won't care, but we have to live with the consequences of your actions, and you don't listen to us. So that's again, something that a lot of people are frustrated about and trying to voice whenever you talk about politics. And
Well, I'm sure a lot of... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm sure a lot of them will be in age old enough to vote in the next elections. And that is actually something that a lot of people expect will shift the balance, because there are more young people turning 18 every day and more old people dying every day. So I think saying you don't listen to us is understandable, but there is a way to make people listen, and that's to vote, and it will happen. Maybe not soon enough, but it will happen.
In an ideal world, it wouldn't just be the election. It's not like you have every 4 years, but there's also the civil engagement, the protest movements, the pressure of interest groups, and all that.
That, I think, is very dangerous thinking, because it's fine when those protests serve your view. But what happens when there's 200,000 people demanding, xenophobic measures? What happens when the far right rallies 200 people to march on Berlin and say that they should stop receiving foreigners and people who are demanding aid from the Middle East?
And now
will you at that point say, oh, yes, but we should listen to the protests?
No, but now you're comparing something that is out of the question, that there is climate change and there needs something to be done, with something that is completely unacceptable, like taking human rights away.
And if
that's
only
something completely different.
And if only you don't see how that logic of someone deciding what is out of the question and what is defensible is problematic when you don't pass this through the filter of the elections and you decide on the protests of however many hundreds of thousands of people. You don't see how that's problematic? Because if there are 200,000 people...
No, I don't see anything problematic with that. That's clearly defined.
No, it's not. You're saying there are 200,000 people marching in the streets for climate change, and we should listen to them. But if there's 200,000 people walking in the streets saying we should have stricter immigration policy, you're saying, no, that should we should not be listen to them. You don't see that's a problem.
I think we're talking on different things now. Because if at first you were saying something anti-Semitic, and now we're back to copyright. The problem
No. I was talking about reducing, affecting immigration policy.
Well, there's always the question on there are different interests need to weigh against each other, but you can't just reduce it to every 4 years you get your say and that's it. You still can make your interests heard, and then it is weighing of interests. And I mean, not everyone who is voting on an issue is an expert, so he needs opinions and information, and that's the way you provide them. And if you say, take to the streets and make yourself heard, you're signaling them that's an important issue for us, and please listen to whatever information you get from the different interest groups and weigh them carefully, and don't just go by, for example, your party line or whatever your usual MO is for voting if you don't know what you're voting about.
I completely agree with you, except I can't help but note again that you only think that way when you agree with the people in the street. I suspect when you strongly disagree with the people in the street, you would say, oh, you know, we shouldn't do that.
I would say no. You're putting this now on the table because I said before, well, there were 200 people and now the copyright reform should have been different.
Oh, no. I'm talking about I'm not going back to the copyright thing. I'm talking about specifically the climate change.
Now I'm confused. Sorry.
Well, this is actually a really good example of why you do benefit from there always being an election coming up. And I remember being so dismayed when Trump was elected, and then there were huge protests in the United States because it does nothing. It's great to organize, and yes, there's some knock-on effects that happen later down the road, but you're better off if the protests happen before the election and when everyone gets a better understanding of what the issues are, and you get voters whom you might not have gotten otherwise. And so I think there's protests are more effective based on or less effective based on when they happen and not necessarily how big they are or who constitutes them. Mm-hmm. Because the only real effect of a protest comes if it causes the people who are leading, who have power, to take concern. Right. Like the protest right after Trump was inaugurated did not cause Trump to think, "Ooh, I'm about to lose an election." No, he did. He actually thought the opposite. I'm glad this is happening now, and I'll make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen right before the next election.
Yeah, I think in a sense you're kind of saying what I'm saying as well, which is protests are, I don't know, the elections are what matters. But
they're mattering in the sense that you can maybe have an influence on who is in power, but it's not just not every change needs to be that drastic to have influence on an issue. I mean, maybe I'm a conservative who, for some reason, thinks there needs to be more done on climate change. So I would still vote for the Conservative Party, but I would still go protest for the people in charge to take notice. Mm. I don't see a problem there.
I agree with that, but I do think that, you know, I don't know exactly how they're taking notice or not taking notice in the German government. Maybe they are being as dismissive as they can be. I guess that might be a concern. I'm just pointing out that I'm pointing out that enacting policy on the whims of a few hundred thousand people in the street is a dangerous way of judging the will of the people. The will of the people is judged accurately at elections, and that's the whole point of elections. The protests are a movement that might be important, but that is not representative enough to warrant policy change. In most cases, maybe in some cases it could be, but it can also be very destructive, and it can impose the will of the few angry on the majority that doesn't want that.
And we're talking about peaceful protest, right? Because violent protest is this whole other subject. It is
to be clear, they're all peaceful protests.
Right.
If you put, it doesn't matter if a leader is facing re-election, if you put them in actual fear and peril, right? Like that's a totally different thing.
Right.
Where leaders tend to find out what a country is really made of, right? When protests start burning things and shooting at people. The thing that I keep thinking of, though, as you're talking about Germany, or really any sort of peaceful protest in Europe for a while, is that it's entirely about immigration, right? Like, there's really not another subject that rises to that level, right?
I mean, the Gilets Jaunes aren't talking about specifically immigration in France, and in Germany, apparently, it's not about immigration.
Immigration issue makes the news a lot, and I guess it makes the world news, but there are a lot of other issues. And I think they're coming up again, because now, we have state elections coming up this year. So this will be coming as a topic again. But at the moment, it's not so much an issue anymore.
I always love to bring up Canada on this show. I love what Canada did years and years ago, where they drew a line around entertainment and said, if we're going to survive as a country that has any sort of Canadian entertainment or any sort of Canadian news, even, we have to protect it. And as a result of that, as a result of them legislating, there has to be a certain amount of what people are consuming in Canada that's made in Canada. Suddenly, lots of things that were previously being made in the United States are now being made in Canada. And you can solve these kind of issues with legislation. You can legislate what's basically a tariff in a way that you get positive results for your country. It's really amazing. I watch TV, you know, a lot, my whole life, and I can't get over how much of what we watch in the United States is made in Vancouver. And it's almost entirely because they figured out ways to legislate that into existence.
Yeah. Well, we have a similar system in France, and the reason why the French cultural economy is so strong with cinema and etc. is because of those protective laws. But that could be an interesting topic for another show. We do yes. have to finish up. I want to give Matthias an opportunity to give us the conclusion of this episode.
I just want to make 2 points real quickly to close this topic, okay? First of all, I'm not voting for a mob mentality or whatever you were trying to say, and I'm not saying that whatever the people on the streets are saying needs to be done, because I am proponent of democracy and the elected democracy. So it's just that I think that the protests are a viable method of making your voice heard even outside of elections, and an important part of the decision-making process of every elected representative.
I think that's fair,
which
yes.
He or she should take into account, and maybe even use to for again agenda setting, I guess, because if there is something important enough for several hundred thousand people to go on the streets, it might be something you need to look at. That's number one. And number two, wanted to make clear that even though many people think they're not being heard enough in terms of climate change, it's not like the German government is denying climate change or anything. We don't have a Trump who's saying, well, there is no climate change. They all agree on that. And they also say we need to do something about that. It's just the degree in which of the measurements they're taking. So many people think that too easy on the industry and too easy on industry lobbyists who are pushing for laxer measures and say try to say we need to do more than we do now, and we need to do it a lot faster than we're doing it now. Mm. And it's not like they're not being heard completely. It's just the degree, I guess, in which they're differing. And the younger people are saying, if you don't do it now, when we get into power, it's too late. So you're playing with our lives now, and that's the reason why we take to the streets. Mm. Just wanted to make this clear that it is not like they're not being heard at all or anything.
No,
just,
but that's very fair, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I did artificially... I play devil's advocate. I always do. That's a function, I think, of this show and my personality. But ultimately, when you present it in the calm and rational manner that you just did, which you actually were before, and cut off my pugilistic instincts, it makes a lot of sense. So I agree.
And
with
I
you.
Think I just want to say I would love to talk to you for an hour about the news around climate change. It's broad. It's fascinating. Since the last episode of Phileas Club, there's been a report that the so-called Attenborough effect led to a major drop in the use of single-use plastics in Great Britain. There's been a report that that the Trump administration was trying to open Arctic oil drilling, and that got stopped. You know, there's just a ton of very interesting things happening all the time on that news front. And it like I say, I think it's the biggest story of our lifetimes, and something that we're not following enough.
Yeah, certainly turning out to be. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Thank you so much to both of you for coming on. And Randy, since you woke up so early, please let us know where we can find more of you if we want to.
Oh, it's such fun on twitter.com/RandyDeluxe. I have had open direct messages for a while on Twitter, and it is fascinating. I wish there was a way that I could show the world. There needs to be some tool I can use to show you.
Like a website.
Yeah. Anyway, Randy Deluxe on Twitter. That's the best thing.
Excellent. You should do that. Take screenshots, obscure the username, and post them on the website. It would be fun. Matthias, what about yourself?
You can also find me on Twitter. On the handle is at Matzekult, which is MatzeKult. And if you're using Mastodon, you can also find me on there on the instant chaos.social. And I have a last request for everyone living within the EU. If you're living in the EU, please remember that you have the opportunity to go vote in May on the European Parliament elections. And please make sure to closely look at who is representing you and make your choice. It doesn't matter really who you vote for, unless it's like something anti-EU, then I don't support that. But please make sure you go look at the issues and not just at party affiliation and make your voice heard.
Completely agree. They're coming up at the end of May, and you should absolutely be involved because it is increasingly important. So vote in the EU elections. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, FrenchSpin.com for the website. If you want to let us know what you thought about what we discussed today or anything else, you can also find Pixels, the gaming show I do, on that site as well. And if you enjoy the show and want to support it, as you know, it's at FrenchSpin.com. No, it's at Patreon.com/TheFiliasClub, and the link is in the show notes as well. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.